I'm taking my ugly mood out for breakfast, hiding with a book in the furthest back booth of the diner, where someone will wait on me. You'd have to throw chunks of meat through bars to me today. PMS, manifested by two ugly pimples, evidencing my true nature, and a savage mood which erupted at Lucy last night with the door slamming. I'd had it. I was angry at both her and Ben and wanted to leave and go to a hotel. Maybe this is why in some places menstruating women were kept in separate quarters. My friend listened to me reading her some of what I've been writing and made clucking sounds of understanding. I'd never read these passages to anyone. She said, men don't know anything about it. It being our lives and our women's bodies, the importance of our female friendships, our feelings. And I'm crabby at Ben for his totally male thing of hating to stop for the bathroom when we drive up to Ellison Bay. I think if you bundled men up together for a car trip, they'd never stop. They'd testosterone their way right through, and if it meant burst bladders and falling asleep at the wheel, hey, they'd have made good time. It's as though time were a rival. If men could only learn, then practice, two simple phrases, how are you feeling, and would you like to tell me a little more about that? I said to my friend, I can't stand men sometimes, but I also need and love men. Anyway, I've carried her response to my writing around with me all day like a little hearth at which I can warm myself. It's sunny, so sunny it hurts your eyes as the ground is covered with white from yesterday's late blizzard. It was a whiteout with a sideways wind, so everything was canceled. Six girls sleep in the living room like the inhabitants of Pompeii struck, not dead, luckily, but mercifully quiet by the hand of sleep. They look like Sleeping Beauty, each of them with their long hair. A window shade hangs halfway down. A chair is pushed against a door. I last heard them about 2 a.m. What a cultural phenomenon, this slumber party. What a culture, these 14-year-old girls, like sharks in a feeding frenzy, yet also maternal and sisterly. One of them foments strife and spreads vitriol. Another one bakes a birthday cake for Lucy. In downtown Chicago, it was misty. I felt wrapped up in the city's coat. I smiled, coming down the Newberry Library's interior marble steps from the reading room with its lit green lamps on its long, polished wood tables, pleased because of the beauty and order of libraries, the polished brass door handles with N in script, the tall Japanese-style dried flower arrangements, the mist outside the windows, closing us in even further in the protected comfort of civilization, books, and peace. Outside, I felt pleasure at being free and alone to stroll those nearby blocks and dream of living there. I passed a house exactly suited to my dreams, a dollhouse Victorian. There was a coffee shop, a bookstore, people walking little dogs on leashes, a dead-end street paved with red bricks. The tops of the skyscrapers only a few blocks away disappeared in the mist, and the street and shop lights shone. Waiting to cross a street, I smelled the perfume of a woman next to me, something familiar about it, mother, and thought, I'm perfectly happy. Later, back home, driving Lucy and her friend somewhere, these young, thuggish girls sang like go and like said and swooning from their need to listen to a very particular radio station, which I decided served the purpose of a sort of outer space signaling device sending signals to all the teenage receiver brains. I longed for the library's peaceful, quiet rooms. But beautiful Lucy just walked downstairs, tall, strong legs, in her teenage trance. It's 3 years since I quit smoking. 10 cigarettes a day times 365 days equals 3,650 times 3 equals 10,950 cigarettes I have not smoked. If it was 20 a day, one pack, it'd be 21,900 cigarettes. What a horrifying thought. So, no matter the weight I gained, I am grateful. Lucy's notably relaxed and happy, chattering, I'm happy it happened because it wasn't the end of our relationship. It brought you and me closer, don't you think? We both cried last night, bumped out of our seats by the air turbulence of adolescence and the big changes besetting us. But we did end up closer. A half box of wadded-up Kleenex full of our tears is now in the kitchen trash can. Our old life is over. Our long old years of babyhood and childhood and the toys, the drawings, Lucy's hair ornaments, dollhouse. It's not a dollhouse now, but a full-size house she moves herself around in, a world where she lies to me, and a girl was said to be having sex with boys who sneaked in someone's basement window. Not Lucy, but a friend. Tonight, because Lucy's grounded, she and I listen to jazz upstairs. I think of all the nights we used to listen, the three of us, when she was 11, even 12. But that's over. Much is over and changed. And now Matt, too, will be leaving Madison, and that will be another bump. What is it I want? Asks the therapist I talk with. How about turning back the clock and undoing all my mistakes? Pulling out every thorn my actions drove into the tender flesh of others, especially my children. I want to be a good mother to Lucy, and we only have 4 years left with her at home. Always, when my period comes, a calm comes with it, and comfort in its regularity, like the certainty of the sunrise or other immutable natural event, though at 48 it is no longer immutable. I know its arrival means relief from tension, an explanation for recent upsets, and a truce. Lucy and I are menstruating together. My period was late, hers was early. The family works then like the interlocking gears of a clock. Matt is gone to California and next week to China. I feel less anxious than I used to for his safety. Feel less the tearing feeling of parting, the wish to keep him. Because he's a man, though a young one, and because I know that I have to let go. I've had Matt for 23 years and hope to have him many more in a new way, to see him grow to be my age. How did he come into my life? What made him be born through me? I wrote him once on a birthday card, you came into my life to teach me about love. But he's not my baby or my child, but a man who needs to grow up more and who is part of a large world. So off he goes to China, and I'm grateful I'm not sending him off in uniform to war, as so many mothers have had to do. Who can love me when I'm at my worst? Who should? Maybe only a mother, and even then, only when you're little, and mine didn't, and mine's dead. The church bells across the street ring as I write this. I woke early apart from Ben, feeling the effects of our embargo on love. Lonely, out of sorts, anxious, sad. My skin feels a sort of itch to be touched. In normal life, we swim like fish in and out of each other's space, but since Thursday we've barely looked at each other. I lay there thinking of getting up without touch, of the long hours between now and when our guests come, of the waste of time and comfort it is to be in our Cold War. So I moved next to him, and as has happened in the past, our mutual life together, after a few tentative touches we made peace. What was won? What was lost? Life flows on. It is like water. I dreamt of three graves planted with flowering clocks, each set at different times, grandmother, mother, and daughter, and realized they were my mother's, mine and Lucy's. My grave was in the middle. I'm blue on a Friday night. Ben is in Laguna Beach, and I wish I were with him in the lovely-sounding California town, instead of stuck here with three teenage girls who view me as an instrument, they hope, to serve them, and who are plotting going to someone's apartment with no father there but six girls and two boys. I figure as long as it's not six girls and six boys, or six boys and two girls, maybe it'll be okay. I'm tired of worrying about where and with whom and how and please turn down the music and would you please do the dishes without my having to ask you again and I'm sorry for looking at you the wrong way and wait, I just cashed a check and why do I have no money? Oh, the shampoo and the eye makeup remover and the acne medication, right, then the money for the shoes and yes, I know, you need a bathing suit. The cheerful light of satisfaction with my writing projects and having flexible time with my own therapy practice dims, sputters, and goes out, and I'm just alone on a dark Friday night, this time unhappy not because I'm home with a small child or waiting for a man, but because my teenage daughter is teenage and Ben does not understand my perspective, what it's like to be left at home holding down reality while your other is being celebrated. I'm here for them so they can be not here. Ben wishes I had more resources. They both wish I had more resources, as long as I continue to be their primary resource. Ben is going to flip when I tell him the cost of the vacuum cleaner. It does seem a stupid way to spend money, but I wanted for once at 48 to buy the best. I still have my grandmother's Hoover vacuum cleaner. He said of Lucy buying perfume, how pointless when she has so much. And I replied, someone might say of him, why buy all those books when you haven't read the ones you've got? And he said, books are good for my soul. And I said, so perfume is good for Lucy's soul. You think? He replied doubtfully. What sort of soul is mine to be gladdened by a green German-designed vacuum cleaner? Yesterday we waked to a radio report of the young concert violinist being dragged by her violin case under a train. They were playing her angelic music, and Ben and I were lying in the sacredness of our darkened bedroom, listening. Sometimes I feel robbed of being lovers by my children. Their needs jolt us out of our private twosome into the arena of parenthood, where the lover's eye is blinded and what's seen is deficiencies, shortcomings, the price of one's lover to one's child, no longer either of them a child, the sharp blade of divided loyalties, the world where there's no perfect answer for each yes to one means no to another. I slept with sorrow and woke with it. Or is it the lover's eye that does not see clearly? We are each, Ben and I, more than just our daily habits, our daily selves. I must remember this and protect it if I want love to continue to flourish. Bad will, intrusiveness, impatience can cut off the light and air necessary for the growing green heart of a relationship. We arrived in Ellison Bay last night, our first trip of the year up here. I could hardly wait to get up and have coffee in the old white ironstone mug. I cut a nearly closed deep coral tulip to put in the turquoise glass vase, closer to me to smell are two hyacinths and a daffodil. Yesterday didn't hold a moment that wasn't happy. Arriving on the peninsula, we stopped at the restaurant with the gazebo, where we had cabbage soup, frosty pink lemonade with the sharp yellow lemon on the rim of the glass, and read the newspaper we'd brought with us. Then as we drove down Cedar Road, there, suddenly appearing before us was our red cottage, dwarfed by the tall trees. It was waiting for us after the long winter and cold early spring. We opened the door to our two small downstairs rooms, revealing our miniature world, like the rooms fashioned inside a hinged walnut shell I'd once seen as a child. The cottage preserves the past like a time capsule. There was the wood washstand that once stood in Jack's and my house in New Hampshire, the teapot and one cup and saucer which I'd kept from that wedding china. There was a wicker chair from my parents' house, some botanical prints of my grandmother's. Here's a cracked aqua-colored bird's egg Lucy had once found, and a small rock she'd painted with a face. From a second-hand store up here, a ceramic lamp shaped like a pony and a child's old school desk. In my writing room, the laundry room, the desk and chair I'd sponge-painted green and pink, a yellow bookcase with flowers I'd painted during my depression, the posters of the blue planet, heavenly bodies, and the constellations. In the little back entryway, the ancient flowered linoleum, and the narrow flight of stairs we painted soft blue-gray with silver stars on each step, I'd sung, "Let's build a stairway to the stars," a framed piece of sheet music, "Wishing Moon," and at the top of the stairs, our bedroom, the wide, scuffed wooden planks of the upstairs floor painted blue, a pottery lamp with red cherries and a pink shade, an old wooden dresser on the drawers of which I'd painted a robin with its rusty-colored breast, a turquoise robin's egg, and a yellow and gray tufted bird. On top of the dresser, an old shaving mirror, a box with feathers. And beyond our bedroom, Lucy's, a blue and gray braided round rug, a white metal bed with a pink chenille spread. On her wall, the moon and stars she'd painted on a deep blue sky. Next to her bed, a toy cradle with a doll in it. I'm the only customer left in the beauty parlor, getting a rare manicure after having had my hair cut. It's the end of the day, and the four women employees are relaxing. One is giving herself a manicure. One is giving me one. One is looking through a magazine of hairstyles, and the fourth is looking at the computer. The woman looking at the magazine holds a page out to the others and says, "Here's the color I want to do my hair." The co-worker giving herself a manicure looks at the page, says, "What, you're getting highlights?" "No," the first replies, "chunks. I want chunks of number 3. "You don't want chunks. Why do you want chunks?" says her co-worker. "Get highlights. Chunks make you look like a skunk. And number 3 is too light. Didn't you just do a number 5? "Nah, I'm number 7. She goes to get the hanging cards with swatches of synthetic hair of different colors. Each swatch is numbered. She points to them in turn. "See this? I used to be a 5. Now I'm a 7. I'm going to get chunks of number 3. Her co-worker shrugs her shoulders. Her nails are now under a little nail-drying fan. She examines them, turning her head right, then left, the way women look at a baby's face. "I like this. It's kind of purple." She turns to glance at me. My nails are being examined with intense scrutiny by a young woman in her late 20s, with very short hair slicked straight back behind her ears. Her ears are pierced with numerous earrings. Her entire ear, in fact, all of the cartilage above the lobe, is studded with small earrings, like an upholstered chair. I look at the other woman's nails, ask, "What color is that?" "Berry Buffalo Bingo," she answers, turning her face toward me with ready friendliness. I see that one of her eyes is artificial. Its movement does not quite synchronize with the other. I've gathered from listening to their conversation that she's about to go on a trip somewhere. "Where are you going?" I ask. "On a carnival cruise," she replies, "with my girlfriend and her cousin." "Oh," I say, "that sounds really nice. I hear there's tons of good food on a cruise." She looks anxious. "Yeah, I'm going to have to be careful about what I eat. I don't want to gain weight." "Oh, the heck with weight," I say. "Enjoy yourself." She relaxes. "Yeah, that's right." "Where do you go on the cruise?" I ask. My manicurist has bent over my hand, removing tiny pieces of uneven cuticle. "I'm not sure of the names of the places," she answers, looking anxious again. "Those saint places, those islands." "Oh, someplace nice and warm," I say. "Yeah." "Are you packed?" asks the magazine reader. "I'm going to do that tonight," she says. "That won't take more than 10 minutes, says the manicurist. "Throw the stuff in a bag." There's a companionable silence. Then my manicurist speaks. I'm going to do my hair a number one. The women make noises of interest and enthusiasm. You'd look great as a platinum, says the magazine reader. The manicurist comes alive. I was once, you know, and it looked good. But you have to color it every 2 weeks, a roots show, and I got sick of it. It turns green, said the magazine reader. Yeah, it was a pain, sighs the manicurist, who's painting my nails with short, sure strokes. The woman who's been looking at the computer suddenly announces, 70% of my clients are Virgos. I look up. I'm a Virgo. Say, no kidding, how do you know that? I keep files on all my customers, she says. The manicurist nods. Like gets like, adds. You always get a certain sign, like my father's a Sagittarius, my son's one, my ex, he's a Sag too. She shakes her head. The woman at the computer sighs, says, yeah, well, men, they're all born under the sign of the jerk.